I've always said to our critics, when you're able to launch a rocket and then land it autonomously on the autonomous fleet out in the waves in the Atlantic Oceans, then we should be able to build like a logistical value chain then that is also sustainable.
Hi there, logistics fans, and welcome to Out of the Box, your go-to podcast about everything cool that's going on in the world of logistics. With a lot of smart people, we not only talk about supply chain strategies, but also the future of e-commerce, robotics, last mile, and more. So if you're ready, then sit back, grab a snack, and let's unbox the hottest trends in logistics with Pia, Margarita, and me, Lynn.
Hey, how is it going, Pia? How is it in Stuttgart?
Good. It's a little bit cold and gray, but that's just Germany, right? How is it in Oslo?
Yeah, everything good here in Oslo. Of course, if you don't consider the minus 20 Celsius outside, yeah, which is always a bit difficult for Italians like me to adapt to that. But I swear we're not going to talk about the weather today. We're going to talk about good old online shopping. So Pia, do you shop online?
I do. Actually, most of the time I buy my stuff online because I barely have the time during the week to go shopping. And on Saturdays, the stores are just bursting with people. But what bothers me the most is grocery shopping. As you know, I don't have a car, so I have to carry everything myself. And I'm a bit of a lazy person when it comes to carrying stuff. That's why, especially during the pandemics, I sometimes use Gorillas. Do you know Gorillas?
I do.
Yeah, but Gorillas recently has given up their location in Stuttgart because not enough people were using the service actually here. So I'm back to shopping the old-fashioned way at the supermarket.
Okay, that's a very sad story. I can't really relate to that though. I don't do a lot of grocery shopping online. But on the flip side, I used to be crazy about Zalando. So when e-commerce first burst out, I was in my bachelor's and I discovered that I finally could, like, there was a place where I could find clothes my own size. Because for the audience, I'm a petite. So I'm the typical person that goes shopping in the kids section in the retail stores. I was ordering so much from Zalando that I'm pretty convinced the postman was judging me. Every time I had to, he had to deliver these huge boxes. But anyway, fortunately, we have a great guest today who has plenty of experience in online fulfillment. Here with us, we have Yonkore Stene. Welcome, Yonkore.
Thank you.
So Yonkore is a partner at Skyful Ventures. And previously, he's been a co-founder at Oda, which is a very successful grocery fulfillment company in Norway. Before that, he worked with Digital Processes at Schibsted, one of Norway's largest media companies. And he's passionate about logistics. And today he's an investor in 360 Logistics, a Norwegian 3PL company. Thank you for being us today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Do you share my feelings when it comes to Oslo weather? I can't believe that you don't.
I think it's cold now. It's been, but it's typical end of December, start of January. Your days are the shortest and the temperature is often the coldest. But I think... looking a bit forward to more normal winter temperatures, and hopefully we'll soon be done with the cold records.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, talking a little bit about your journey into logistics, it's been a little bit atypical, actually. So can you tell us a little bit about how it started and brought you where you are today?
Yeah, no, I think for me, ending up being a co-founder in a company like Oda was highly influenced by several aspects. But I think like one is, as both you, Pia, and Margarita mentioned, especially Pia, the lack of joy of shopping groceries. It's never been something I've enjoyed. Rather on the opposite, that it's been just stressful and just a broken shopping and customer experience that... somehow I really wanted to see a solution, that it was fixed. At the same time, I worked in Schibsted, which is a massive media company. And while I worked there, we were in the midst of the digital revolution. So you can really see how lines of code and new companies popping up from nowhere with their own built technology were able to compete with 150 and 100-year-old companies that former had been protected by large barriers, but where you saw that technology, what you can do with lines of code and programming and cell phones. And yeah, in short, the digital revolution just opened up so many opportunities. And I think Norway, being a small country and having an entrepreneurial mind, looking for ideas and opportunities where you could build companies at scale. In Norway, I think like the Norwegian grocery industry is like one of the few large enough industries. So I think my unhappiness regarding shopping in physical stores combined with what I saw was possible with digital technology combined with the market opportunity. And I think in Norway, it was a very typical like this oligopol situation with few players, and which meant it was really hard to compete with the players on their turf. So like establishing a brick and mortar store was almost impossible. Lidl tried without succeeding. ICA tried but had to give up. So competing on their turf is almost impossible. But what happens in these oligopols is that players become a bit complacent towards innovation. So, and I think we saw, okay, they have no interest in innovating in this space, but we saw the possibilities there. So I think that was things, just puzzles falling together over a pretty long time. But then you start thinking about this concept, and then you meet your co-founders, and then suddenly the day where you say, okay, let's start, we're ready. I think it was a long journey, also really inspired by a lean startup on how to not like design this massive project and try to think that you have the solution before you start and spend a lot of money, but having an iterative, cost-efficient way. I think if we would have known how much money we had to raise in order to get where Oda is today, I'm not sure if we've started, but we started off being naive with the lean startup approach, which enabled us to create a lot of value along the way. And I think the least part also really relevant to the topic of logistics for my sake is that while working in Schibsted, saw that we had to like increase efficiency due to market changes. And one of the presidents in Schibsted launched this lean continuous improvement program, which I was lucky to be a part of. And when we launched, I also got the responsibility for the lean program in Schibsted. And for me, lean is about how to deliver top-notch quality, no compromise on quality, while also doing it with the best processes, spending at least resources as possible. So in a way, you're looking for like the perfect process in order to deliver the best results, combined with this continuous improvement culture and mindset that you can always be better, always be better. And I think people that knew me working in Schibsted said I was like this lean evangelist, but I think it's that philosophy, just that underlying concept of striving for perfection and operational excellence continuously while not compromising in quality. It was just a concept that really fell to my heart. And I think that was one of the things we quickly understood with Oda, that if we wanted to succeed, we needed to be the best in the world when it came to logistics and the processes there. So I think also being in this digital changing environment, being super in love with the concept lean, seeing lean startup as a movement also in a way develop based on like this Toyota production system principles really made sense for me. And it all came together. Like when we started all that, we saw, okay, we need to create the best processes going forward in order to also create a user journey and a shopping experience that was not only slightly better than going into the physical store, but it was 10 times better.
Now we're already deep in the topic. Maybe we can take a step back and can you explain for those who don't know what Oda is?
Yeah, great. you put money on the talking machine now, Margita. But now Oda is an e-commerce grocery company. So we started off having the vision to revolutionize how people bought their groceries in Norway. So it's like a supermarket, just you're doing your shopping at home with your cell phone or from your computer, and then the items are brought to you same day or next day. So it's an e-commerce grocery company. I think you have several of these companies also in other places. The plan was that we should also be able to deliver to UPI in Stuttgart, but at least for now, Ola's not in Germany, but for 6 months they were operative in Berlin, trying to revolutionize the German grocery market.
Looking forward to that.
But we'll come to that. But first, I was a bit curious about the journey as of the founding team. So I heard that the founding team at Oda was pretty large. So you were together with another 9 co-founders. So I'm wondering, like, how was it to cooperate and to start a business with so many people? It's a bit unusual.
I think for my part, the start of Oda started already back in 2007, where I started thinking about this concept, and we were thinking of it back and forth in 3 years until I met Carl, who is the CEO and also critical part of the co-founding team. And when we met through one of our common friends, he just said, "I want to do this." And you can just see the spark in his eyes that this is a really cool mission and we really want to embark on it. And I think if you just groceries is such a natural part of every household. Everyone needs food. And I think the magnitude of the challenge that we wanted to embark on was so inspiring. And then Carl started working even more with gathering a team. And it took from 2010 and until 2013 before we were the full team of 10. Along that way, I think I mentioned Lean Startup, but I think the book Lean Startup from Eric Ries really changed the projection of this as a project, because first we're thinking like building this massive huge project, raising a lot of money, but no one wants to give us a lot of money. So we had to rethink. But when this Lean Startup book came, it just made sense for us that we need to have technical resources as part of the founding team. And in a way, changed the path on who we were looking for. And it serendipitously, we met these 7 people, where 3 of them were working with front-end and digital design, and the 4 others were, in a way, full-stack hardcore programmers. And I think they were sharing an office in Oslo, and they had this, like, standing joke in the office that they were waiting for these 2 guys to knock on the door to ask, "Do you want to join us, change the world with this massive project?" And then suddenly Carl and Vegard, the CFO, came knocking on their doors and asked if they wanted to be a part of a revolutionized Norwegian grocery industry. And I think along the way, gathering this team, I think the purpose and the mission was such an inspiring task and a challenge in itself that I think everyone just wanted to be a part of the team that created something with this potential impact. The grand scale of what we were, everyone said we were crazy. No one believed in us. It was like 10 crazy people setting out for this mission. I think just that feeling of creating something together. I remember the first time we met all the founders. I still get goosebumps on my hands just being in the same room with these 10 people or 9 others. And we just wanted to do the same thing. I think that was a strong force binding us together. And then on the other side, I think we were, especially Carl, but also us as a team, Carl the CEO, we were able to take the hard discussions up front. It was very clear who's going to have which role. If we disagree, who's the boss? And I think we were able to just take care of all the hard discussions and the role making at the very early stage, which meant that I think we pretty much knew at least like the role dynamics and the team that we went for, and that made it much easier. But then again, just the power and the energy that we gained from the challenge itself was also an important contributor for, I do believe, for us 10 as a team to stay together for a lot of years.
Yeah, and I mean, how to say no to revolutionizing the world of grocery? I understand the appeal. And well, also besides a strong team, well, Udo, of course, has a very strong product, especially when it comes to logistics and processes, right? So I read recently that the system today manages to reach 250 UPH per operator, which is absolutely impressive. So has also Uda considered during the journey like offering that same process to other supermarkets, for instance? Or do you think will this stay part of like Uda's competitive advantage?
I think from the start, as part of our DNA, we have always like strived to create the very, very best product. And not only when it comes to logistics, but also in the application and in the customer journey, in how we meet the customers from our call center. I think we were the first Norwegian company to have, instead of having do not reply, we don't never want to talk to you at the company.no, we had hi at kolonial.no, which was Kolonial was the starting name of the company. So I think we had this, we just really wanted to be the best at everything we did. And I think that was also the underlying part of how we started to build our logistics and a really important reason on why we're at those efficiency levels that we're at now. When it comes to the world changes and strategy changes, so after the pandemic, when Oda started with their international expansion, the plan was, okay, we've been able to build this end-to-end process in Norway pretty well. We do believe that we're good at that. And what we see is that when you're in a way, when you're dealing with your own challenges and your own faults and your own operation, I think you just know where the shoe, in a way, what you call it in Norwegian, where the shoe doesn't fit or where the challenges are. So being both in charge of delivering all the systems, but also having the operational know-how in order to, okay, is the issue here or there, or is it there, gave us an advantage in order to build a better product, both for the customers. We knew what customers complained about. We knew what the employees complained about. We had all our numbers. We had also the technology or the programmers to change and improve stuff. So that was the strategy going into our international expansion. And then the financial climate wasn't with Oda in 2022. So they had to reevaluate the international strategy. So one part of the strategy now, which wasn't a part of the strategy when I was there, is to see, okay, what we saw while being in Berlin was that, okay, we didn't have the funding to continue, but still we had the best customer offering, we had the best app, we had the best logistics. So the plan now, I think, ongoing internationally, is to see, are there any other supermarket chains that want Oda to do the logistics as a service? And then again, they have a full platform in order to do the hard work for other supermarket chains. And it's also similar to what, yeah, I think we're coming back to that later, but what we're also doing in Sweden now together with Mathem is to continue with the Mathem brand, but in a way change everything under the hood.
Yeah, that would actually be my next question, because I understand that you're not that involved in the operations of Oda anymore, but can you maybe share your view on this merger between Oda and Mathem?
No, I think as a part of the founding team, it was great news to see that the merger finally came through. I think everyone that has been involved, both understanding the owner structures in Mathem and Oda and understanding the e-commerce grocery play in the Nordics. The thought about Oda and Mathem doing something together hasn't hit them. I think I would be surprised. So I think it's been more something, it's been written in the stars, if you can say that, that this would bound to happen. I think it was a really good match. And I think both Oda and Mathem in their respective markets has been able to create this market and make sure that people are used to getting their groceries home in a different way. So we, in a way, have been market leaders. And especially when you see the level of... I think Oda and Mathem was ordinary built different. Mathem was a more... was a company more built by people with experience from the grocery industry, buying a lot of tools, warehouse tools that existed on the market that need to be like retrofitted to e-commerce grocery, while Oda was started more as a technology company from start with the ability to do everything themselves. So I think, yeah, no, it really makes sense. And I'm really intrigued to see how that journey will continue. I think they're up to a great challenge now by merging both culture and systems in order to get the maximum advantage out of a merger like this. But it really makes sense. And I think both Oda and Mathem will really benefit from this merger. And also, hopefully, the customers will notice an even better product going ahead.
When we talk about the market and the customers, what do you think are the main challenges that grocery fulfillment needs to deal with today? And also, maybe you already talked about that you go into the German market. And is it any different than the Nordics? Aren't there any differences and all the challenges are the same?
I think there are both differences and challenges. I think you should never underestimate the differences in shopping habits and market dynamics and which labels are people used. I mean, I remember we went to Poland to see one of the e-commerce grocery players there, and they had like 11, 12 brands of milk. And in Norway, you have two. So there are different aspects, demographics, trends. I think another important part is like if you just see the density of how closely people live. I think in Norway it's 14 people per square kilometers. In Germany it's way above 200, and in Netherlands it's above 400. So you also got these aspects together. But from a logistical perspective, I think that's been like the saying with e-commerce grocery from the early 2000s and after Webvan and a lot of players tried to succeed with this when the internet came, is that like it's too expensive. It's not possible to get the efficiency in the logistical chain. It's too expensive to deliver the groceries home to people. And I think that's coming from Norway, which is it's not that dense. It's a high cost country, high wages. So I think the challenges weren't with us, but if we're able to get positive unit economics building a logistical system here, then that will always be relevant everywhere else. And I think as you talked about, like UPH on units per hour on 250, I think one thing is the cost efficiency, but it also increases the speed on the warehouse and how fast you can deliver goods. It says something about the capacity on warehouses. So it's all these positive effects. So even though it's a lot of different dynamics in different markets, especially when it comes to something like food, which is so everyone needs it. So you got so strong local dynamics, I think, and you got cultural dynamics, and all this is different. But I think when it comes to the logistical part, there are a lot of similarities, but in a way also in just creating great digital products. You see a lot of international applications, user interface, web pages. So I think there's some generic aspects there as well.
Yeah, totally. And this leads also to my next question, because like I said before, I was one of the people who used Gorillas during the pandemic. I think I was not the only one. I think there was a lot of emphasis on fast delivery at that time. But like I said, Gorillas already left Stuttgart, so they don't deliver here anymore. And I think they left some other cities in Germany too. What's your take on that? Is it just a Germany thing? Is it a Q-commerce business model thing? What do you think?
I have to be a bit careful because I think a lot of the arguments towards Q-commerce has also been held towards e-commerce grocery. And I've always said to our critics, when you're able to launch a rocket and then land it autonomously on the autonomous fleet out in the waves in the Atlantic Oceans, then we should be able to build like a logistical value chain then that is also sustainable when it comes to unit economics. But I think if you look at the Q-commerce, and I think also the e-commerce grocery and the e-commerce business as a whole had some quite special years leading up with the pandemic where you didn't have any alternatives. So that was the only way in order to get your items, even if it's from Zalando or Gorillas or Foodora or Oda. And then combined with that, you had suddenly infusion of massive amounts of capital. People didn't spend that much money, so they suddenly had a lot to spend on shopping. And then you had investors with a lot of money and the interest rates were low, so money were seeking venture opportunities. So I think like we're coming from a massive bubble, and I think a lot of companies were artificially kept alive. And I think that is also part for a lot of the Q-commerce players. But if you look down at the basics, it's about density. Okay, I think it's one thing is, okay, how fast can you pick and pack things, even if it's a store or a restaurant or a dark warehouse? I think within those spaces, we're just continuing to become more and more efficient. But then comes to the delivery part, it's pretty much about density. And also, how are you able to utilize that density with great software, route optimization software, smart software in order to route orders, make, I think an important part where we spent a lot of our development resources in Oda was to actually just make the chauffeurs, make the warehouse staff, make them super efficient and make sure that they had a great time at work. I know, just for example, if our drivers finally found a parking space after being looking for that for 10 minutes, to a customer, we built it into the system so that he could register this parking place for this customer so that the next time you would deliver, you would not have to spend 10 minutes. So all these things. And I think also as in a lot of cities, if the density is there, if they're able to use technology in order to maximize the efficiency and really optimize the job to be done. But I think that's also a bit combined with the willingness to pay from customers, because I think venture money has paid for a lot of great software as a service and also B2C services the last 3-4 years. And I think that has to change because it's not good business to give away services for free. And I think in Norway, we had a company called Brødboksen, which is the bread box. They were delivering this insanely great bread at your door every morning. They were really evaluated by their growth and they were able to grow really, really, really fast. Had this massive, super great product. But at some time they had to start to make money and they didn't dare to charge money from the customers because they asked the customers and the customers said no, but they didn't really test. So I just remember taking the metro to the city from where I live in suburbia outside Oslo the day that the bread box went bankrupt. And it was like, no one was looking at their phones. It was just, everyone was just sad and unhappy. It was really like the fresh bread on the doorstep was taken away from them just because they didn't dare to. Okay, maybe you would have lost 50% of your customers, but I think the last 50% would more than be willing to pay. So I think it's, yeah, if you're able to utilize technology well enough in high dense areas with a really great product and people are also willing to pay for it, then I think at least somewhere in the world it will make sense. I remember when we opened Oda in Berlin, there were like reporting about 17 Q-commerce companies in the street, in the city center of Berlin. I don't think that's sustainable. So it also makes sense that you also see mergers within that space, but it's hard. And I think, the future we'll see, but it's optimization and volume game, first of all, and then I think it's what we see with groceries, at least. It's really hard to be efficient delivering groceries on your bike when you have 50
especially
items.
Especially in Norway.
Especially in Norway. But I mean, like for Oda, when I left, we had 50 items per order, which is quite large orders. 3 cardboard boxes of food. It's maybe you can fit 1 customer on the bike.
Yeah. And make it a ride-hailing service then. But looking also a little bit away from the Oda experience and more like at the future of e-commerce. I mean, you work in VC and you're exposed probably more than others to disruptive ideas that aim at shaping the future of the industry. And given that you also invest in the non-logistics businesses, I'm wondering if there is anything unique to the logistics VC space that you have noticed that you don't see in other industries.
I don't think it's something special for logistics or e-commerce that we don't see in other industries. But I think it's exciting to see that it's a lot of thing with the technology that we have available today that is possible. And it's possible to do things much, much better than what a lot of players are doing. And in a way, you can see that incumbents that has control of the market situation very often doesn't have the need to innovate or to really, it's like the story with Nokia that like they had the fifth generation ready, but they like launched the first, second, third, fourth, just to have these cash cows. And what I in a way like with VC, it's not only VC, it's might as well like the startup, the founder, the technology startup aspect or environment is that if you look at, I mean, look what Zalando did to how you shop clothes. Look what Amazon did just to retail in general. I remember when we started Oda, as I said, we wanted to deliver the very best product, to not know when your item came home to you or to wait 3-4 days for your groceries to come. It was unheard of. We needed to be there, if not the same day, at least the day after. And we started introducing these hour slots and in a way revolutionized not only the grocery industry, but also the distribution of package industry in Norway. And I remember like the postal company and PostNord, they were really mad at us because we showed the customers how you could do something in a much, much better way. But then I'm just looking at all these possibilities that they're there now, ready to just take them and create better products. But I don't see incumbents do that. But that's why I really love the combination with founders with great ideas really wanted to take what's possible and disrupt and create new, better stuff. And that's where VC come in, because our job is to find these founders and see the potential in their plans and dreams and support them. And I think that's encouraging, being an early stage technology investor, that your job is to find the people that are ready and have the possibility to change the future for the better. And part of your job is to both support them financially, but also sharing with you all the mistakes you've done in your life. So, and maybe some of the smart things you've done.
Yeah. And I mean, it's some responsibility as well to, you know, bet on what the future will look like in your position. And in e-commerce, logistics and fulfillment, like, do you see that still Amazon and the companies like Amazon and Zalando are driving the transformation? Or do you see like that there are new companies that are further changing the customer expectations?
I think right now it's e-commerce logistics. It's not like the hottest topic around. I think that's you got a bit of backlash after the pandemic and also related to the financial situation we're in now. But if you look at, I think what intrigues me is like when you see what Amazon did as a first mover, creating that offering, which is now, I mean, if you don't have the same offering as Amazon in terms of SKU range in your shop or in order to like delivery times and prices and stuff like that, you're in a way out of business. But they, as a first mover, they had to build everything. They had to build the whole puzzle. I mean, they even have like a massive business selling cloud solutions today. And why do they sell cloud solutions? Because they saw as being such a massive store, they had to improve their web systems as well. So So I think Amazon really, and for Zalando as well, but Amazon maybe Claire's, they really built the puzzle of the next generation e-commerce. And but and what you saw after that was that bits and pieces of this puzzle were you were able to build new companies that delivered bits and pieces of this puzzle. So like in 2003, it was really hard to run an e-commerce store with next day delivery. But today, I mean, you can, without a coder, get a Shopify account. You have 1,000+ apps that can give you everything you need. You can have fulfillment as a service. You can have third-party delivery services. And you can really create this massive super opportunity. You're getting a lot of new companies delivering not the whole puzzle like Amazon did, or that's the same case for Oda. We had to build the whole value chain, both the store and everything and the fulfillment system, because no such thing really existed for e-commerce grocery. But now you see that all these small puzzles is suddenly available from different companies that has continued to, in a way, democratize e-commerce in a way that it's like I said earlier, what made it able for us to start Oda was that technology lowered the barriers. And I think we just continue to see that. And with AI, especially now when it comes to like the customer service, but also the shopping moment in order to have your shopping assistance and stuff like that, when it comes to better analytics software in order to do purchases and stuff like that. So I think we're going to see a continuously evolving development of all these parts and puzzles, which enables retailers and merchants to continuously deliver better and better shopping experiences. So, and I think if you look at Zalando and also Amazon and the biggest ones, I think it's inspiring to see that they're still able to keep a lot of nimbleness and speed by, even though they're growing, they're still really focused, okay, how do you distribute decision power, how you keep the agility, the speed in the company. And I think as long as they're able to keep that momentum and keep that speed and agility, they will still be massive players. As I said, I think it was impossible to beat the Norwegian grocery companies on their same turf. I think it will be really hard to beat Amazon on their turf. But then again, I think direct to consumers, I think niche stores with all this puzzle, it's like you said with your example with Zalando, I think, and what Amazon started off by selling books, with such a model, it's just so much easier to showcase the whole SKU range from the world, making better shopping experiences. So I think, I guess what's hard is to be like in the middle, being those middle players that really needs to change digitally. And they're in a way being attacked from above and from the bottom up. So I remember I discussed this when like the pandemic and the financial situation had changed. Like you suddenly saw the massive growth in retail and getting a dip. And I think we might see it's not growing that fast. But if you look at the long lines, I think you will continue to see that e-commerce eats more and more of traditional retail. And I think that will also make it challenging for traditional retail in order to, they're in a way losing the volumes in order to keep the same level of quality that they've had. So I think it's also spiraling effects here. And talking about same day delivery, next day delivery and all these things, shopping from home, getting personalized experiences, I think we're going toward a phase where we still see more and more e-commerce going ahead.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I think from what you told us, we get a pretty good idea of how the future of fulfillment will look like. And how does Skyfall's investment in 360 logistics fit into this vision?
What a lot of retailers experienced, especially in the pandemic, was that, okay, we have this, you had some pure players just selling online, but you have a lot of like omnichannel players that, okay, we have some online shopping going on, but mostly in physical stores. And then suddenly pandemic came and everything just blew up and they really had to do something fast because their volume changed overnight. And I think what we saw is that everyone needed to buy their own fulfillment centers, everyone needed to ramp up. And I think when things calm down a bit, they understand, okay, the volume isn't where it was again, so maybe we acted a little bit too fast. They see that doing e-commerce fulfillment is pretty hard. So it's quite difficult task to do. And our thesis is that it's hard to be a really good like sports brand, knowing what to shop, knowing your market, and also to be like a top-notch warehouse fulfillment operator. Like I talked about density and volume, and I think if you look at all the malls that is around, even in Norway with such a low density of the population, still there just around Oslo, I mean, it's 15, 20 malls lying around, which has a huge transactional volume of items, but also seeing the decline and the loss to e-commerce. And what we do believe is that if you get distributed fulfillment centers that are able to deliver fast with high quality and great customer experiences, it's a question about time before it's so hard to have a physical store, and so much volume will be over on e-commerce. And I think if the volume is big enough on e-commerce, I think the malls we have around is a proof that it is room to build a viable structure of distributed fulfillment centers. I think it will be hard, and it will be for the ones that is specialized in really being great 3PL e-commerce fulfillers. And I think that's built also our thesis around 360 Logistics, because they built their logistical setup based on being a same-day delivery provider. They're in a way like the next generation fulfillment, warehouse fulfillment provider with the same mindset, the right mindset towards operational excellence, massive or never compromising on quality, and also doing things at the lowest cost, but also at the highest quality. So I think our take is that they have the mindset, and they also see this picture on where they can play as a central infrastructure player for the future of e-commerce. And then maybe we will see if more and more of retail will and sales will happen online, then our thesis is that 360 will, and players like that will build the underlying infrastructure. And I think what struck us with 360 is they're both AutoStore customers, and we've really been able to utilize AutoStore where AutoStore is great, but they just have this passion for top-notch quality, top-notch speed. They understand that logistical is not only a lot of retailers look at logistics as just a necessary cost. They don't see it as a potential competitive advantage. And I think if you're really great at logistics when it comes to communication, speed, quality, and stuff like that, it will be a competitive advantage for the retailers. And I think our bet is that 360 will be the backbone of the future e-commerce infrastructure in Norway and outside of Norway as well.
Do you see any barriers or something that we miss in order to achieve this future state of e-commerce, like regulations or, I don't know, retail business models or whatever?
I think we need players like 360 Logistics to showcase and to provide such a great experience for their customers that other players see that. Why aren't we able to deliver the same quality, the same speed? It will be interesting to see when the new generation is growing up with the generation that has always had the smartphone, that is much more familiar to e-commerce shopping and stuff like that. But I think it's the same with Oda. A lot of people say, okay, I've been thinking about e-commerce grocery. It's a really good idea, but they've never done anything about it. So you need the ones that is actually doing something about it. And I think when it comes to this part, see that especially in the Nordics, too many of the 3PL players, they're in there by some coincidence. They're not like really visionary saying, we're going in to change stuff. We're going to build the best infrastructure for the future commerce system. I think you need those players. And we see 360 as one of the potential players to actually have that vision, to take that position. But I think you need the role models in order to go in and really stir things up and in a way make people say, it's about giving someone such a great experience that when everyone else look at it, say, we want that as well. And if you're not able to provide the same quality, then it's a really disadvantage. But just looking at all the opportunities and possibilities that's out there, I'm somehow surprised that not more players and actors really use the possibilities that are out there. But I guess that's just how the world works. So that's why we need to back disruptors and founders.
Absolutely. But what do you think about Norway? I mean, what makes Norway a good place versus a bad place to start a logistics business? So I live in Norway as well. And I mean, I think that on one side, you don't have a super huge market. Maybe it's like 5 million people. But on the other side, I mean, you have long distances between urban centers. And I mean, if you need to go somewhere, you probably take the plane. So what's your perspective?
I remember discussing with Fredrik Hamilton, the Budbee founder, which is now Instabee. And he said, if we succeed in Sweden, we succeed in the whole of Europe, except for Norway. But as you said, it's a small country. It's not that dense. I think it's not that much room for shortcuts building logistical systems. If you really want to build a great, great system with high quality, affordable for customers, that is sustainable business. So I think in a way it's a challenging environment, but then again it forces you to really create good solutions. I think with like the average wages, which is pretty high, the unions and organizations are pretty strong. We've seen other likes of Oda in different countries, which has totally different rules to work with, and it's much, much stricter in Norway. But in a way, it forces you to really create something that is really good. So I think that's a good thing. Even it's counterintuitive, but if you nail it and if you succeed, then you should have something that is appealing outside of Norway. I mean, it's a pretty safe country. I like to say it's a great sandbox, because we're it's a safe country, highly educated people. We are pretty much in front of the shoe when it comes to digital habits, internet penetration. We're eager to jump on new trends. So to have it as a sandbox where you can test out new stuff, I think it's a really good place to be. But I think as a founder within logistics and the founder in general in Norway, I think you should really fast understand when you should head outside of Norway, and then not necessarily to Sweden. It's so easy to look to Sweden because it's our next door neighbors, but it's much more interesting, at least for us as a venture and as an investor, to see if you're able to succeed to get Pia as a customer in Germany or UK or the larger markets.
Yay, please do that.
Yeah, and that's a good bridge to my last question. That's basically, I mean, what would you recommend to someone that is considering starting a company within logistics? Like, what are your boxes that you need to check?
I think just in terms of logistics, I just think to have a lean mindset and to just understand that are you going to do great logistics, then you need to understand lean. For me, that's a prerequisite. And unfortunately, I too seldom see that really, really grasp an understanding of that as a concept doing logistics. I would also urge people to, in a way, think disruptively in how can you really make a difference. I think with the technology we have and the technology that is coming, the possibility to do really, really great logistics is there. But I think you have to start with your ambitions and really want to do and to make a difference. As I said, when we started Oda, we knew that we're challenging people's habits. And people have been going to the grocery industry for their whole life. So how do you change that? And I think what we start with, like, we need to build a product that is 10 times better. Not twice better, not 1.5 or 3 times better. It has to be 10 times better. So how can you build a product that is so good that everything else is not an option? It's like your smartphone regarding to your old Nokia 3110. That's in a way the differ I would urge people to grasp. And then it's also back to sales. You need to be able to sell your solutions. And that's maybe a hard part. I tried to sell free home delivery with Oda, and that was really, really hard. So I think also to be a great seller, never underestimate the power of a great seller.
Yeah, absolutely. This was it for today's episode, and we hope that you learned a thing or two about online fulfillment and Skyfall's futuristic view on it. Thank you so much, Yonkore, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks for a new episode of Out of the Box.